Herb, how are you doing?
Good. Hey, and welcome everybody to the beautiful Pacific Northwest.
Excellent. Let me pan around this because we usually don't come outside. This is April.
Honest, there was sun just 2 seconds ago. Really? It'll be back.
I hope so.
If it comes, as soon as it comes back, you'll have to pan around again just to prove it.
Absolutely. So, FDIS signed it.
Yes.
Signed, sealed, delivered. Congratulations.
Well, okay. The FDIS is.
Yeah. So, yes. Take us through what that means then.
Okay, so FDIS is the final draft international standard, which basically just means we get to begin the last ballot. So we can't actually, you know, say signed, sealed, and delivered until all the national bodies, the countries actually say, yes, we want to make this an international treaty,
okay,
an international standard. But we're not expecting there to be any more hiccups, and that ballot is now sitting in Geneva waiting to be launched. And when it is, it'll be a two-month ballot, and we hope it'll be done by the time we have our next meeting in August in Indiana. So
Excellent. We're
looking forward to that. That's a big step for C++OX.
Absolutely. So, talking about C++OX, I wanted to kind of step back just a little bit.
Hey there, son. Show people.
Okay, here we go.
Right over there.
Oh, my God. Amazing. Excellent.
Okay, you know
you're
it's
a
sad.
Sun catcher.
You know it's sad when you get excited about sun.
Hey, we live in Seattle.
That's right.
Which is very interesting. Because Saturday was incredible.
It was.
Right?
Don't tell anyone, but I'll all want to move here.
Yeah, don't move here. Unless you're a C++ compiler developer and you want to come work
okay,
on the Visual
C++
team,
then
please
beautiful.
Come up here. All right, so what were the goals of C++OS? I mean, C++ in some sense. What were the goals, like in top of mind?
The main things were to take what C++ does well and improve it further. We're not trying to be some other language. We're not trying to go after some other market, but stay true to the power and performance roots of C++.
Mm-hmm.
But say, hey, here are some things that should be simpler. Or here are some places where we have to do a lot of repetitive stuff and we'd like to actually have much better power. So, for example, one of my favorite examples I always use, lambdas, why do I have to go write a function object by hand and do 10 lines of boilerplate somewhere else all the time, when I could just write what I want here and immediately pass it as a parameter? And those kinds of things just help the language get out of the way, so you have all the expressiveness you had before, and actually in many places more.
Okay.
But it's a lot more convenient. And even Bjarne, I like how he's has really hit the nail on the head when he said it feels like a fresh new language, and it does.
Yep. Now let's talk a little bit about one of the great things about the language is it's as abstract as you can possibly be and still maintain machine-level performance because of the sort of direct mapping to architectures.
Yes.
So when you add these new features, when you're on the committee and you're designing, thinking about, you know, what should we add, make it easier for people, when you add more abstraction, do you worry that there's going to be a performance penalty? And in this release, including in the library, the amazing work that's been done in the libraries, what kind of balances, trade-offs would you have to make?
So, first question I think you asked was, do you worry?
Yeah.
And the answer had better be yes. In this language, it is our job to allow people to be close to the metal. You can always have abstractions, as long as, A, they either don't cost hardly anything, and or B, even if it's hardly anything, you have a trap door to get down to the bits if you need to.
Okay.
That's always been where C++ has been. And so, all of the features that we've been working on continue to stay true to that. So you do get expressiveness, you get the ability to say things in a more elegant way, convenient way, some more abstractive power.
Mm-hmm.
Like with variadic templates, you don't have to write a bunch of overloads anymore, you can say what you mean.
Okay.
But you always get down to the same level you can exploit the machine's performance for a traditional CPU core.
Mm-hmm.
Now there are some things that are now part of the mainstream machine that aren't in C++OX, like GPGPU is getting popular, cloud is getting popular, mm-hmm. and both of those are really examples of heterogeneous computation.
Mm.
Traditional languages are still about homogeneous computation, so we're taking the next step there in terms of libraries and extensions,
mm.
and so it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. But for mainstream hardware on the CPU, the C and C++ are the languages where it's their job to stay close to the metal, and we're still there. It's a lot simpler and easier in many ways now.
Absolutely. And another thing I don't think we talk enough about is in most cases, the operating system that programs, applications run on, also happen to be, they speak the same language, they have the same types, right?
Yes.
You don't have to do this weird sort of, and this is not to say anything against the languages who have their own virtual machines and they spit out what ultimately the operating system can understand, But that's also a good feature, because Bjarne always talks about it as a systems programming language. But in some sense, it's also an application development programming language. If you look at some of the most successful applications on Windows, for example, I don't know, Adobe, Photoshop, browsers, I mean, you name it. Those are native applications. They're not system programming, as it were. Can you talk a little bit about C++ as an application development language?
So there's been a lot of interest in managed languages. Mm-hmm. And there are fanatics who say, oh, managed, who needs that stuff? Mm-hmm. And there are fanatics who say, oh, why would you need anything else? It's possible to go overboard in any direction.
Yes.
Java, .NET, C#, F#, all of these have a wonderful role to play. If Perl and Python is the right thing for your application, go use it for that part. Dollars to donuts, you're going to be using more than one language for different parts of your application. Where power and performance matter, that's where C++ really shines. Okay. Now, it turns out that our big flirtation with managed languages and, hey, look, we have a shiny new hammer, everything starts to look like a nail, which is natural and understandable.
Yeah.
We've started to get more balanced again as an industry. I'm not just talking about the Microsoft ecosystem,
sure.
But as an industry, people have started to learn this. Yeah. And managed languages are very useful. They have many advantages in productivity, mm-hmm. in safety, by putting those first over performance, if necessary, if there's attention. Mm-hmm. But especially as we've gone to things like cloud compute and GPGPU, when you've gone to things especially like devices, phones, slates,
yeah.
those kinds of environments, it's turned out that everybody started with managed and said, you know what, we also need native, and it's sort of been also need native, and then all the apps are native.
Yes.
Most of the things that matter are native. Why? Because power and performance are important. And especially the more portable you try to go, and the more lean you try to be with sipping power, and with getting the most use out of every CPU cycle, native code turns out to not be such a bad deal there, because we know how to do this. We've been doing it for decades. It still matters, even though we're in the 21st century and a decade in.
Sure. Excellent. So let's now jump into C++ OS, which I'm only going to assume has got to be called C++ 11 at this
point.
Well,
we're sort of on the cusp of that, because we're so used to saying C++ OS, because we kind of sort of expected X to be a decimal digit, so like ignore all the C++ OSB jokes now, because that's what it is. We're sort of waiting just to make sure, let's not jump the gun, let's make sure that the national bodies really do approve it, because it's their prerogative to say no if they choose mm-hmm. to. But we expect them not to, and to say yes. And when it gets approved, then it'll be time to call it C++ 11, just like we called the previous standard C++ 98.
Okay.
And there was an update C++ 03 in the middle, but it was roughly the same as 98. It was just bug fixes.
Okay.
So this is the first new C++ standard in what will be 13 years.
Wow.
Can you believe that?
I can't believe that. That's amazing.
It doesn't seem like that long ago that we voted out the last one. I remember that meeting.
Excellent. So let's talk a little bit about There's minor changes in this release, like, you know, the angle bracket can now, you can have angle bracket, and the compiler's not going to think you're trying to
yes.
C out or C
yes.
in or whatever.
That was slightly embarrassing.
Yes. So thank you for fixing that.
Oh, thank Bjarne. Thank the committee.
Thank Bjarne and the committee. Well, you're on the committee. You chair the committee.
Yeah, but most people do the work.
Now, we can take a little sidetrack there, because one of the interesting things about committees in general is that they're usually made up of experts in the domain. You have unbelievable amounts of experience with the specific language in the question, in this case C++. But what seems to be underrepresented are the users. And what I mean by that, you know exactly what I mean by that. Can you talk a little bit about that? How do you balance out between getting 30 people from around the world in a room or experts in the domain, and then you have millions of people, you know, the dark matter out there that's actually pumping and cranking code?
I see that dark matter meme as becoming a favorite.
It's a great thing. I love it. Well, I'm into physics, so that really resonated with me, because it really makes perfect sense. Mohsen has a thing with a nice capacity to create metaphor.
Yes.
I think he's an expert at that. But
we should talk about dark matter some other time
yes.
in a physics sense. But speaking here, yes,
yes,
it's important to have an international standards committee be representative. That would be nice.
Yeah, yeah.
And you try for it. In fact, C++ has been much better at it than many other committees. Everyone
okay.
tries, but it's very easy to have only funded experts in the room end up meaning mostly vendors.
Hmm.
I remember one standard, it was not C++ standard, it was a different standard that was very important back in the day, about 15 years ago. And when you went to the international standards meeting, there would be something like a dozen countries represented. But roughly half of them were only IBM employees, and the rest of the half were partly IBM employees.
Oh.
So it's very difficult to get diversity, but that has never been a problem with C++.
Okay.
So we have a lot of vendors in the room, compiler writers, library writers, but we've also had a lot of consultants and authors and just users who their companies send. That's how I began attending. Users their companies send who use this language in the field, have requests and can participate and give good feedback on usability as well from their experience with large-scale and small-scale systems.
Okay.
So we have actually a very nice balance, I think, and that's one of the strengths of C++ is that we have that diverse community.
So let's talk, you know, one of the things that I think you guys deserve kudos for on the Microsoft side of the house, the Microsoft Visual C++ and compilers. You were sort of the first to implement lambdas and go out with it before it was an official standard. Auto as well. How does it work in some sense? Who comes up with, let's add type inference to the language? Does Bjarne have to do that and then pass it on to you guys? Or who came up with that idea?
Okay, so just the way you're asking the question begs me to say something. So
please.
First of all, it is incredibly powerful that we have a major language that is an international standard, and the actual language's creator and original designer is still a key participant.
Yeah.
That's not true of C. It's not true of other languages that are international standards. I mean, when you talk international standard, you're talking about a legal treaty. I mean, this is pretty big time stuff.
Okay.
So to have the actual inventor and his mindset still running the evolution working group, which is sort of almost like a mini design team, really helps. Having said that, a language design team and a standards committee are two different things. One is autocratic, benevolently. One is democratic. There's all sorts of convincing that needs to happen, and there are other differences. So it's very good to have that influence there, that steadying hand. But believe it or not, not everyone agrees with Bjarne all the time. Sometimes a majority disagree and run over him.
Yeah.
So we can argue about whether those are the features that didn't end up so well, because there's a lot of
concepts.
Let's not talk about concepts because we only have, half an hour.
Okay.
So that could be a whole another channel line.
You should do that.
Sometime in the future, because we may look at concepts again.
Right on.
But in terms of the actual design of C++ OX, there are a lot of experts in the room. Generally, the subgroup within our committee, which is called the Evolution Working Group, which Bjarne has chaired, they look at new features, new language features in particular, and how they should be designed, how they integrate with the language. Mm-hmm. Then the core language working group, generally doesn't so much give design feedback as helps to make sure it's stated correctly. Have you thought about these interactions? How do we specify these details? And there is good design feedback there too. But that has been a pretty good working relationship. So even though it's not a design team, sometimes it almost approximates one. And that's helpful.
Excellent.
The other thing is, when you talk about goals for the release, what are the goals for C++ OX, which was your first question?
Yes.
I sort of gave you the canned answer.
Okay.
The slightly more realistic answer
is
the goals are what anybody thinks they should be and manages to convince enough people to get their proposal accepted.
Interesting.
Because nothing happens in an international standard without somebody writing a paper, presenting a detailed proposal, coming in person to defend it, at multiple meetings, getting feedback, re-revising the paper, making compromises, getting agreement, and only after all that work, when there's no guarantee they will get agreement, only when they do, is that feature voted in. And yes, we try to make sure it plays nice with all the other features, but there is no such thing as somebody going and saying, what should the key pillars of this release be? Bjarne did that. He tried to provide that. He can't enforce it.
Okay.
The only way committees work is by papers proposing individual features, and we do it piecemeal, feature by feature. You try to get some holistic integration, but really the only things that get done are the features that people care enough about to invest that amount of time into.
Why is it that PMs always have to talk so loud?
I don't know. We could ask them.
Yeah. All right, so let me ask you a question. Bjarne says it feels like a new language. You've already talked how it sort of is just an incremental step in evolution in the language. He says that it makes it easier for people to understand. I want to talk about what he calls novices, and I think what he calls novices, in my opinion, would be somebody, who can is proficient in the language but doesn't necessarily have to understand exactly how it's implemented or how the architecture actually works, where it's going to be run eventually. I don't think he means somebody who doesn't know how to program at all.
Well, actually, he does.
Okay, let's talk about that then.
So in general, he means, when he says for novices, he usually means for people who are novices to this language.
Okay.
But he's actually done quite a bit of work at Texas A&M, and his new book that he's just brought out, his latest one, the last couple of years, has been about teaching programming.
Cool.
The book happens to use C++ throughout, but it is not a book on how to learn C++. It is a book for non-programmers to learn how to program.
Okay.
It happens to use C++. To get a language as complex as C++, to have a smooth enough ramp, which it didn't used to have, but a lot of the C++ teachers help with, a smooth enough ramp for that audience is a major achievement.
Agreed.
Because after all, remember, productivity and ease of learning are not the pry one features of C++. They are power and performance.
Yes.
But where you can also get your pry two features, why not? And so we've been trying to make it easier for novices to learn and use as well.
Mm. So in some sense, why can't C-sharp, I did say that for a reason. Why can't C++ look more like C-sharp?
Well, it sort of does. You just take the two plus signs and overlap them. Right?
Excellent point. But what I'm really trying to say is when you move further out and abstract, I mean, how far do you think you could go in terms of abstracting the language so you could hide? I mean, with unique pointer and shared pointer and stuff like that, you're hiding pointer details that you used to not be able to.
So
let's talk a little bit about that. And that's library.
There's an important distinction to make there.
Okay.
Because you're talking about a couple of different things. The details of fundamental facilities like garbage collection, whether it's automatic GC of the under, and everything's a pointer, as it is in the C-sharp world, or whether you use smart pointers, for instance, and reference counting is your garbage collection story, is to some extent more about the implementation details in your environment than about the language. Because I can show you C++ and C-sharp syntax on top of the both of those. Because C++ has Great Circle and other garbage collectors available for it. Mm-hmm. You can do reference counting in C-sharp. So that's less about the language as about the environment facilities. Language syntax that people think of is a bit different.
Sure.
The important thing to notice is a lot of the people who talk about C-sharp and C++ and Java, look how different they are. Mm-hmm. Makes me wonder how much we get out sometimes. Because they're all the same. Now, let me defend that, because obviously they're not all the same, and I'm using hyperbole to try to make a point.
Yeah.
But if all we know is Java, C#, C++, C, we start to think that all languages have curly braces, all languages have roughly the same basic syntax, and that, oh my goodness, these major differences that C# distinguishes between class and struct and C++ doesn't, and the way virtual functions work in constructors are, oh my goodness, huge differences. Yeah. No, they're not.
Okay.
Try writing Prolog. Try writing Lisp, Scheme. Mm-hmm. That's a different language. Try writing Perl and Python. Try writing Ruby. So those are different kinds of languages that we do well, and usually when we talk, I end up with a little sermon about how important it is to get exposed to other languages.
Yes.
And we did that last time, too.
Absolutely.
But from that point of view, looking at all the languages that there are and the breadth and richness of programming languages, including ones that are used in production every day of the week, C++ versus C# is such a tiny delta, just in terms of just the language design. The biggest difference, of course, isn't in the syntax, like I said, it's in the services that are offered in the environment. But that has a lot less to do with the language.
Sure. Now let's.
So you got your little sermonette there.
That was great. That was my goal.
But it's like, you look at these two languages, look how different they are. Well, not really.
True. Well, one, of course, makes it a little bit more explicit that you're moving memory around, because at the end of the day, everything comes down to memory when you're writing code or when your code is executing. We create an object, points to
everything it. Comes down to memory.
I think from general purpose computing, I mean, it could be, you could argue, and this is great. I mean,
maybe
I would argue
data,
it all comes,
data
down,
comes
to memory.
Down to memory. Data comes down to memory. What about instructions?
Compiling.
Okay, that's, so your processing is at least as important.
Sure.
And your processing is where you have to start worrying. In this. There's a combination of both processing and data to be able to do things like exploit vector processors, vector units, SSE, SSE2,
sure.
AVX, and those things, to be able to use heterogeneous compute like APUs, GPUs, to be able to do things like cloud computing.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, there's instructions matter too. It's not just about memory.
But instructions happen at the sort of the post-compilation level, right? You know, like assembly and assembly
Let the language. Compiler worry. It's pretty little head about it.
Let the compiler worry about that stuff. But the developer, at some sense, you know, with languages like Java and C#, we remove the need at the compositional level at the language to think about how managing memory with pointers. I mean, and that gives you a lot of power. Where does the power and performance of C++ come from, if not from how it allows you to instruct memory?
Okay, so let's talk about that. So first of all, I'm right now, because of working on our next release and forward-looking things, I'm thinking a little bit more broadly about heterogeneous computation and what will it take to do that. So we'll talk about that again in a future episode. Yeah. But just looking at Java, C#, C++, C, just the mainstream computation on mostly homogeneous CPUs, yes, the main difference is memory management. I buy that. But you say, what is the power-performance difference if not that? Well, actually, and this comes back to instructions, it's a lot about inlining, being able to do things like get rid of the abstractions so you can express the abstractions, but they evaporate or disappear when you don't need them. Okay. And inlining, you know, through template instantiation, is all about instructions, not where the data happens to live at what address in memory and who collects it when, dynamically, because it's all statically done, right?
Yeah.
So I think even in this current world where you take the narrower view of just, you know, mainstream, homogeneous, CPU-only computation,
yes,
even there it's not just about memory and just about managing memory lifetimes. That's sure. One major difference, but again, I think of it more as a service of the underlying environment rather than necessarily a feature of the language that's built on top of it.
Interesting. I mean, couldn't then one argue that, you know, and we're not going to go down this rabbit hole for too long because the viewers will be like, talk to me about C++, Matt. But it's a good conversation, because in some sense, why couldn't you have a language like C#, for example, that does the same thing?
Oh, you can.
But it doesn't. Like, it doesn't today.
Well, it depends on what you want. It depends on what you want to invest in. I mean, language is just language. There's no reason that you can't compile C# down and have a native compiler for that. That's what... I still say pre-JIT. That is such a 1990s word.
So you mean MSIL?
Well, yes. I mean, you generate MSIL instead of JITting it, you pre-JIT it at install
Engine.
Time. Engine, thank you. Some days I just space. It's Tuesday. What can I say?
Well, you know what would be cooler? Would be to take C#.
But isn't that a funny word, by the way? Pre-JIT?
Yes.
I mean, it's just it's just so deeply wrong on many levels, but it's part. but it's partly... It's just
premature
shows,
JITting.
Yeah, and it just shows the microspeak that you fall into sometimes when certain... We still call calendar invites S pluses because schedule plus back in the... Never mind.
No,
you're
going
to ask a C++ question.
Well, no, what I was going to ask was, what would be interesting would be to go from, like, C# to typed assembly language, which they're doing some really interesting research over in MSR.
Yes.
And then you just remove all the types when you produce the machine code, because they don't make registers, but machines don't understand what typed assembly means. It means nothing to them. So that could also be interesting. Instead of going the MSIL route, which one could argue, well, why isn't that? That's MSIL is typed. Anyway, this is going down a rabbit hole.
Do you have a C++ question?
I do. So
sorry, I'm just being snarky.
Let me ask you a question about some of the new things that are in C++ OX. So you've mentioned R-value references,
yes,
auto, and lambdas. What else are some of the big time features in your mind?
Oh.
Variadic templates.
Yeah, variadic templates. Initialized lists are going to make certain kinds of uses a lot simpler.
Yeah.
New style for loop. A lot of that's candy. I mean, you look at auto and the new for loop, the range for loop.
Okay.
It's hard to argue that either one is a big feature. And yet, I think that, you know, some large minority of the love people will have for that, for the language, for C++ OX over C++ 98, is going to come from features like those.
Okay.
Just because it's like auto. Mm-hmm. Compiler, can I please stop beating you over the head when you know what the type is? Why are you making me spell it out with all these angle brackets and colons, especially if it's a long templated type or nested type name or something like that?
Mm-hmm.
So just convenience. And being able to spend more of your code solving your business problem, solving your application problem, than spelling it right for the compiler.
Interesting. That sounds familiar.
It does.
Yeah. Productivity and...
Well, you know, hey, I said when productivity and power aren't in tension, why not do both?
Amen. I think that's one of the powerful things of the language. What else? I mean, you know, do you, one of the things that are big problems, and you've talked about before, that I don't see in our implementation of this would be like async and future. Can you talk a little bit about, I mean, let's just talk about this. What's going on in Microsoft Visual C++ world? I mean, it's one thing to say this is now going to pretty much where we think the language is going to be. Thank you very much. Now we're going to do the committee thing. What about what our developers who use our compiler and our wonderful tools, what can they look forward to being able to use out of this?
So without making specific product announcements about about Dev 11, specifically, obviously, those are features that we're interested in.
Yes.
I and others from Microsoft have spent a lot of time with the committee on many features, including futures, atomics, lambdas, memory model, all those kinds of things, because we think they matter.
Sure.
And that's why we've been the first or among the first major compilers in the world to implement some of them. I think we were the first major compiler to implement lambdas, and I believe among, not the first, but among the first to do R-value references. By the way, there's a tension there. The sooner you implement something, even before the standard is finalized, the risk, more risk you take that it may change on you, and both did. So we're still also in this release, I think I can say without it being too much of a surprise to people, also catching up. We implemented what they said then, but then they changed the spec a little bit, so now you can expect some incremental improvements there to more closely match what the final spec in the standard said. But obviously we're interested in those things. And I think async and futures and those kinds of things, atomics in particular, for lock-free coding in C++, are just part of the bread and butter of what you need going forward.
Cool.
And, you know, frankly, you can do, using volatile in C#, you can do what atomics do in C++, and you do lock-free coding in C# too, mainly for performance and scalability. But that's going to be more and more important, and who cares about performance? That's part of what we live for. C++ is about power and performance.
Yes.
And so that's why people do lock-free coding more in C++ than in Java. And that's why I think it matters more, especially having a standard portable way to talk about lock-free code for high scalability.
Excellent. And, of course, you know, with C++ is also about type safety, hard to believe. But that is one of the things that is very important, especially when you're building critical systems, right? And let's talk a little bit about type safety. We don't talk about performance. We've been that's implicit in all of this. But let's talk about type safety, because C++ and type safety.
C++ is type safe, mostly. So obviously it's C compatible, and that's where most of the leakage happens. If you avoid those bits, you actually have a fairly type safe system. There's a couple of things you need for type safety. It wasn't clear to me until a few years ago, maybe in the mid-2000s, that I finally understood what people meant when they said, to have type safety, you need garbage collection. The main reason is if you want to make the guarantee that a pointer, a T-star, or a widget star, points to memory that is allocated and once or will hold a widget, then you have to actually guarantee that the memory is still going to be around. That requires the garbage collection, of which reference counting is a form. You can quibble over whether automatic garbage collection is the only kind that should be called automatic and whether reference counting is something other. I don't care what we call it. But you get there with reference counting and smart pointers as well. Especially if you do, you can get rid of objects before the last pointer goes away if you don't need them anymore. You decouple object and memory lifetimes that way. Then you can talk about the things you need to talk about to make a type-safe system. So you need memory safety. But the rest of C++ is already very type-safe. Templates are type-safe. You can't do things that you're not supposed to do. Overload resolution is type-safe. Yes, if you cast things around. Thank you very much, C. If you cast things around, you deserve what you get. You're saying to the compiler, I know better. And if that's true, everything is good. If it's not, then, well, you said, compiler, be quiet. I'd like to now take over. And so you get to do that. So when you do type punning, when you do explicit casting, that's when you start asking for trouble. And you're still fine as long as you know what you're doing. But if you stay in the mainstream of C++ objects, classes, C++ is mostly type safe already.
Excellent. So with all new things comes the elephant in the room. And we have to talk about the elephant.
There's
in the
only
room.
One elephant. Okay,
big,
which
this
one
is
are you
a big of? Giant elephant in the room, and this elephant is backwards compatibility. Because, you know, one of the goals obviously had to be let's not break too much. Let's really, really limit what we break. Because you did add some breaking changes. Yes or no?
Yes, but a minor. Very few.
Okay. Can we talk about that process? I mean, when you push something forward, or add new things, obviously you always have to think about how many people, even in Microsoft, that are still, when they think about C++, it's C with classes. I just interviewed somebody not too long ago. In fact, you know, the phone I'm holding in my hand, a lot of the C++ running in here was C with classes. That's the sort of style that they used.
And, you know, there's nothing wrong with that.
Okay. But it's 80s, man.
There's C. There's a better C. C with classes is already beyond that.
Sure.
Yes, I know it's 80s, but it's still useful.
And right on.
There's much more available should you choose to dip your toe into it. But that's the nice thing about having a rich language. You can use the parts. You can use the parts that solve the problem that you're working on today.
Okay.
But backward compatibility is a very high bar. Obviously, just because it's an ISO standard does not mean you have to be backward compatible. Hmm. There are other international standards, I will not name the guilty, but those who are in those domains know who they are, that just completely shipped version 2 of the standard or something completely different that was unrelated to the first version of the standard.
Interesting.
And didn't care really very much about backward compatibility at all.
Hmm.
And that's perfectly fine. Users may or may not choose to adopt it, but that's perfectly fine. You get to do that because in ISO, the only thing that matters is what national bodies approve.
Hmm.
And whatever you can get the national bodies all to sit still for and vote yes for, enough of them on the same day at one time, gets to be an international standard.
Okay.
So, but maybe you don't want to know too much about how the sausage is made, so I'll stop with that.
But no, that is interesting.
But for C++, the committee felt a very heavy responsibility, and I think rightly so. They were responsible for one of the world's most widely used programming languages.
Yes.
And that's an important custodianship. Mm-hmm. So to maintain that backward compatibility bar, because not every programming language has 3 million users out there. Last time I looked, there was something like, depends on the study you look at, but roughly 9 million professional programmers in the world, depending how you define professional programmer.
Yeah.
And last time I looked, roughly a third of those were C++ developers actively.
Yes.
And by the way, the reason novices are important, to go back to an earlier thing,
is
because there are still new C++ programmers by the droves every year.
You're right.
So that's why that's also important. So backwards compatibility is important. The very few places where we broke backward compatibility, we analyzed to make sure we understood what it was we were breaking, how many people would likely be broken, and I'm going to say something controversial now.
Good.
Whether they deserved to be broken.
Ah.
In the sense that, and I use that colloquially, but we sometimes use that term in committee, at least I have, to say, you know what, yes, we're breaking that code, but it deserves to be broken. And you say that what you really mean in a more polite way is they shouldn't really have been writing that. That's not really what they wanted to do anyway. Mm. And if they were just getting away with some side effect of some weird combination of rules, that's not what the feature was advertised for, and it's okay.
Mm.
So there were very few places, even at that, where we would break anything. Probably the biggest single breaking change was auto.
Hmm.
Because in C, auto int I equals 0 has a meaning. There's a semicolon there. I'm assuming you can see the semicolon. Hmm. Has a meaning. It means an automatic stack-based integer I. And if you wrote just int I semicolon, that the auto is implicit.
Hmm.
Now you can write auto I equals 0. No int. And that means the same as auto int equals 0. That actually breaks compatibility with C because you actually can't get the grammar right to allow both styles. It turns out that hardly anybody in the world ever wrote auto or its cousin register that you could write there and had it mean that. Mm. So we figured we were breaking almost nobody. And we actually did code searches through large bits of source code, large source code bases like the Windows and Visual Studio, like others that were available to other companies, to make sure we were breaking hardly nobody. And so anybody who picked up C++ OX may need to go back and change two or three places where their C code actually said auto or register, but hardly anybody does. And so we got to take that keyword and reuse it for something else that will get used and is important, because it was essentially an unused keyword. Technically, it was a breaking change, but that gives you a sense of sort of how that got weighed, and that we actually did research to make sure we understood the consequences of the action before going ahead and breaking it.
Interesting. I mean, of course you did the research. I mean, one would hope.
One would hope.
One would hope.
It's not good to assume, but one would hope, yeah.
So one of the things that comes along with... So C++ is a library language. Didn't Bjarne say that? So
it's a library building
language. It's a library building language. That's what it's mainly used for. If you look at the rich set of libraries that exist, you know, STL up there in the office.
The person or yeah. the implementation?
The person and the person. I think of them as synonymously at this point, but... So
hey, how did he get to be STL at Microsoft.com? Never mind.
Anyway. It's incredible, actually. Yes. So
hi, Stefan.
Let me ask you, though, what changes in the... I mean, we went early with a lot of the changes in the library as well, right? You've already talked about some of them. But there are big changes that happened in the standard libraries with this release as well. So can we talk a little bit about that?
Well, in the C++ standard library, yes, there were quite a few extensions. Mm-hmm. Now, fortunately, a lot of those were done as a separate TR, the Library Extensions Technical Report,
Okay. Also
sometimes known as TR1 or the Library TR. Mm. And that shipped several years ago, and we were already shipping that in our last release. Pretty much everything except for the special math functions that didn't make it into C++ OX. Mm. So we were already shipping most of that already. Mm. And that's where a lot of the high-value parts, like the smart pointers, regular expressions, hash-based containers, those kinds of things were already in there. Now, there were many other things that C++ OX also added in the library. But it's interesting to look at, and I said the same thing to the committee in Madrid. Mm. If you look at all of C++ OX, language and library, and if you look at what are the whole thing, first of all, is way more stable than the C++ standard the first one was at the same phase in its process. Mm. Much less new inventive stuff that hasn't been implemented. It's nearly all been implemented. We know it works. It's had more bake time. The standard is much more in a stable place, just as a cohesive draft. Mm-hmm. So it's in a good state. Even of that, which are the parts that are the most stable, the most reliable, have had the least churn? They're the parts that we already published as TR1. Even though it was non-normative, it got the work out there, it got review, and as we adopted those things, hash-based containers, smart pointers, and such, into the standard, we still tweaked some things along the way. Mm. So they're not identical to the ones in the TR1 sub-namespace, but they're really close, almost identical most of the time. And the fact that we had the liberty to then get feedback and fix them, we shipped, it's like shipping a community tech preview,
yes.
a CTP, uh-huh. is really what it is, because it's not normative, but here it is, yeah. try it out, implement it, see what you think, and we did.
Great.
And we got feedback, and now in the standard, those are the most reliable and most baked parts of the standard.
Amazing.
The whole thing is in very good shape. I'm very happy with the shape of the whole standard, and this especially, which, getting back to your question, we've been shipping since Dev 10, since
yeah.
Visual Studio 2010, is in really good shape.
Excellent. So that of course, leads to an obvious question, which is why... One of the things about standards is they take so long. The other thing, one of the ways to get around that is to do experimental releases, is to kind of fork and be like, you know, this is going to be C++ infinity or whatever, and we're just going to keep pumping out releases and ideas, and you guys experimenting with the real world, but understand that it's experimental. Mm-hmm. And as you did with TR1, you found that, wow, these are really cool features that I think we might have gotten right off the bat. Anyway, is there any thinking around doing more frequent sort of experimental releases?
It's interesting you say that, because now people are going to think, who know about this,
yeah.
that we talked about this before, and we didn't.
No, we didn't.
So you actually have no idea what I'm about to say.
No, I don't.
But I actually suggested that. I'm not the only one either.
Oh, okay.
There are other people in the committee who have suggested that before I did.
Okay.
Over the last few months, earlier this year, over the winter.
Mm.
You know, now that we're getting ready to ship C++ OX, what comes next? And so
yes.
we're going to have that discussion for real more starting in August at our next meeting in Indiana.
Okay.
But one of the specific things that a lot of people are talking about and that I approve very strongly of, and I hope that we do, is take what we did for the library TR and do technical reports. They're not normative, but we've proven that people will implement them. You know, work for a compiler vendor. We will take notice of them and implement them. And have them be language and library technical reports.
Mm. Excellent.
That is, and get things out. That gives you freedom to do experimental features, which this committee insists on doing.
Mm-hmm.
So let's accept that and embrace that and say, we're going to experiment, but technical reports are the way in ISO that is the right way or the intended way for that kind of thing to be done.
Excellent.
And so I think that's really worked well for C++ OX, where we sort of were half on that path.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, we shipped those things 5 years ago. So there's something to be said for speediness there.
Yeah.
So I think it'll increase our velocity, and
good.
We're going to have this discussion, though, for real, and actually make some more decisions about what our plans are for the future later this summer.
Excellent. Now, I want to ask you this, since you're the chair of the committee, and you're a titan in the C++ world. Let me ask you a question.
That's the right good word, but anyway.
Why not? But what I'll ask is, what are you sort of disappointed in, but didn't make it into this? Like, did you have a feature that, or that you were like, you know, I love this. This is actually a really good idea. And people were like, you know, or there was a vote, you know, 5-4 or 10-9 or whatever. Can you tell me, like, did you have that experience, or are you just ecstatic about where this is today?
I have to say, and this is going to sound like complete marketing speak, but I'm pretty ecstatic with where it is.
Okay.
I can't, as you ask that, I'm thinking, is there a feature that I worked hard on that didn't make it in? I mean, I proposed TypeDef templates. We got something slightly different, but there was a superset, which is template aliases instead. I'm not disappointed. The things I thought were the most important personally, and you know, everybody you ask on the committee, we're all peers, we're all equals, and everybody will have a different opinion. My own was that the things I worked on, which I cared most about, futures, atomics, memory model, the portable threading API, lambdas, and those kinds of things, especially move semantics, R-value references, they're all in.
Okay.
Now, we did have to cut a few things. I think they were the right things to cut, such as modules, which I think C++ should have a standard module system.
Yeah.
David van der Voorde of Edison Design Group put in, and others who helped him, put in a lot of work on that. But as a group, we felt, you know, this is a promising path, too experimental for now. It's not baked enough for this release. Okay. Let's keep thinking about that, but post C++ OX. It's like any product. You have to do scope management as well.
Okay.
And so that, from a product management point of view, that kind of thing is an easy cut when you say, needs more bake time, good idea, let's keep working on it. That's not to say we're not interested, but it's on a different path or on a different time scale. But the things that got in, I think, were the right things to get in. There were some things that got in that we can look at 5 years from now and see whether they made sense. The guys at Bloomberg did a lot of work on scoped allocators. Okay. I personally don't know if that's exactly how that's going to fall out, if that's going to be a net usefulness or not. But then again, I haven't followed the feature, so nobody should take my opinion on it because I haven't looked into it yet. Okay. Nor do I give any talks or write any articles about it because I haven't looked into it in enough detail to satisfy myself yet.
Okay.
I expect to catch up on a few of those things over the next year or so. But some of those things we're going to see. Like always, C++ makes experiments that are bets, and we'll see which bets pay off. And so far, most of them have.
Excellent. And you feel comfortable that C++ is in a modern state. Let me try to explain what I mean by that. You know what I mean by that,
yes.
Right? When you think about where it came from and how it's slowly moved, you feel good that it's now sort of a more modern language.
It feels like a fresh language. I think the word that appeals to me, that I think of, and this, it's interesting, Bjarne came up with the same word, it's fresh. That means it's not different, it's not unfamiliar, it's still C++.
But it's fresh.
But it's like, that's what I would have expected from a refreshed C++, and I actually feel refreshed sometimes when I write it, because I could just, auto and lambdas, I could just write things as I'm in the flow of where I want to be without writing extra words just to keep the compiler happy, that just because the language makes me spell out lots of boilerplate.
Yeah.
So a lot of that, by cutting a lot of that, that's where some of the freshness comes from.
Mm.
And just being able to express my intent better, and that further solidify that power of abstraction while staying close to the metal.
Excellent. Final question, because I know you're busy. And I do really want to talk to you about the asymmetric or heterogeneous hardware reality and GPU.
We should do that.
We really should. Because that would
be fun. I'm giving a keynote in June about that. It's on my blog.
Okay.
Yes. And I'm told that it will be recorded and be available. It'll be webcast and available on demand. So we should talk for Channel 9 point of view anyway.
Yeah, of course.
But that'll also be available around the middle of June.
Good. Because that's a really interesting topic. I know it's very near and dear to you given the mess you made with your article about the end of free lunch, man.
Hey, I didn't take the free lunch away. It was already moldy in the freezer.
Right on. So, great talking to you as always. I know I thought I had a last question. I guess I don't know if I asked it or not, but I think it is good that you're comfortable with where we are. It'll be interesting to see what we release, and I think that's going to be important to people watching this. And I think it's also important for them to understand that whatever it is, it's not like the end. There will be iterations, and we will get closer, because as we all know, standards, it's a very bitter, sweet kind of thing, especially in the community, for the dark matter out there programming. Let me ask you a question. Standards are important
bittersweet? I think of them as sweet, actually, but...
They're bittersweet.
You're going to get your last question in here somehow,
I
can tell.
But they're bittersweet. I love ending Channel 9 interviews like this, because it means it's not going to end yet, which I think is good. But bittersweet because one of the things as a developer, if you look at the web world, why do standards matter? Well, I want to make sure my code runs the same across browsers. Well, if I write in C++, I want to be comfortable that, well, my code's going to run across platforms. It's portable. It's a portable language. That's why I'm using it. But because things are going to be implemented differently across compiler vendors, that's when we start getting into that kind of bittersweet territory.
So let me give you an answer that may be a good place to wrap up the interview.
Thank you.
Because it kind of does bring it together, and it's sort of what's in my heart about where the language is.
Right on.
When you say bittersweet, the thing it makes me think of is, but isn't there more we could have done? Yes. So sometimes it's important to say no, right? Mm-hmm. But yes, there are more things we could do in the language, in ISO C++ and also in Visual C++. The good news is this isn't the last standard. I don't believe that. Mm-hmm. This isn't the last release of Visual Studio we're working on right now. There will be more. C++ has legs. Mm. The thing that the last decade has proved to me more than anything else is that C++ has legs. A lot of people have predicted its death, have been doing that since 1995.
Excellent. Always great to talk to you, Herb.
Thanks, Charles.
Thanks a lot, man. All right, go native, brothers and sisters.
Woohoo.